Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. Joining me is an entrepreneur who sold software. Actually, you didn't even sell software. You helped enterprise with their software, right? The stuff that they bought from Microsoft. Am I right about that?
That's right, yeah.
And the software that you're selling is just so enterprise-y that I wasn't even thinking of having you on. Let me introduce my guest before I keep insulting him. Saravana, am I pronouncing your name right?
That's right, yeah.
Saravana Kumar, he is the founder of Kovai. They create lots of software. The first thing that they did was create something called BizTalk 360. It helps people who use BizTalk. And as soon as you said BizTalk, I just felt like I'm never going to get it. But we had a conversation before this interview started, and I think I understand what BizTalk is, right? Big companies have their data in lots of different places, lots of different big software. They need a way to access all of it in lots of different places, right? So for example, they might have their data in a big database somewhere, but decide that they need to have a mobile app. They want to get access to that data on the mobile app. BizTalk is the connector that speaks between the two platforms. Am I right about that?
Yeah, in simple words, you can think of like a postman. So all the systems, you don't want to create a spaghetti between them, like system A talking to system A, B, C. Yeah.
Yep.
So the BizTalk sits right in the middle. So everybody talks to only one system, and then the BizTalk takes a job of connecting all these things together. So if you want something to be replaced in the future, you can just replace one system. So you don't need to unplug all those mess if you've created a spaghetti. So that's in a nutshell, yeah.
It's not exactly analogous to Zapier, but essentially like that, connecting software. What Zapier does for SaaS, this does for big enterprise companies. So this is what you were doing for how many years of your life were you helping companies set that up?
I spent about 10 years working as a consultant, okay, building software on top of BizTalk server because it required some level of coding. It's not as simple as click and drag and drop like Zapier. It requires quite a bit of mapping and coding and things like that. So I worked as a consultant for 10 years, building solutions for large customers between 2000 and 2010.
Yeah. I got to ask you what you enjoy about that, because frankly, that just seems so enterprisingly boring, to be honest with you. But here's the thing. He discovered a few problems that the clients that he was working with shared in common. He said, you know, I think I could solve it. And what he ended up doing was creating software that solved those problems. And we're going to get into what it is. That software became BizTalk 360. That's the heart of your business, isn't it?
That's true. That's a core business at Kovai.co, yeah.
He then ended up creating multiple other products, the latest of which is the one that I feel is just the easiest for me to understand. It's document360.io. And what that does, well, what does that do?
It's an online self-service knowledge base. So any product, if you're a SaaS company, you need a product knowledge base. So we wanted to specialize and do just as a self-service knowledge base alone. So at the moment, you know, the companies will use the self-service part of the help desk products like Zendesk, Freshdesk, Intercom, etc. But the challenge with that is their offering on the self-service part is very limited because these companies, they don't want to overload their product with too much on the self-service part. And we experienced the pain ourselves, like as you're explaining, like BizTalk 360 was our first product, and we had to dealing with enterprise customers. We need to have like a top-notch knowledge base for those products. And we were hitting the roadblocks in terms of managing it and having multiple writers and version control and workflow, all those kind of things. That's when we spotted there is a gap in the market to have like a sophisticated self-service knowledge base back in 2017. And then we kicked off the project and then that turned out into be one of the successful products in the company now.
A good knowledge base sounds like it doesn't, I don't even love the name knowledge base. It doesn't communicate how amazing it is when it works right. The other day, you know, I love my iPad. I was writing notes with the pen. I needed a way to export it through an HTML into this other app. And I said, I've got to now deal with customer support on this freaking app and wait for them to be around in the morning. Well, I hit the help button. They had a knowledge base. I said, these things don't usually work, but I don't want to waste time. I went and I found my answer like that. And the way that they wrote it, the way that they presented it, the way that each section linked to the other was just a work of beauty. And it solved my problem literally under 3 minutes and made me happier to use that product. And that's the beauty of a knowledge base. I always thought knowledge base needs to come with the software that we all use to answer customer support email and customer support tickets to come in other ways. You said, no, actually, that's the way it's usually presented. That's not the right way to do it. We're gonna create it better. I'm going to find out how Document 360 came to be. I want to talk about biztalk360.com. Also, we're going to talk about so much and how you built up this business, why you bootstrapped, how big it is. It's way bigger than I would have expected. Thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. You people have all heard me talk about them now forever. If you need a website hosted, just go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. They'll get you a good price, good hosting package. It'll just freaking work. And you can move on with your business and grow it. And if you need to hire a developer, I'm going to tell you later why you should be going to toptal.com/Mixergy and get great developers. All right. Can you tell me revenue? What's the number? How are you doing?
As an overall company, we are about close to 9 million ARR at the moment.
9 million in annual recurring revenue. Look, now I see a smile of pride on your face. Frankly, as I did the ads, I saw your face and was like, what is Andrew doing right now? But this, I see the smile of pride. Profitable?
Yeah, it's a bootstrap company. We haven't taken any investors. And you probably know bootstrap companies, the only survival mode is you need to be profitable.
Do you take any money and put it in the bank, invest in real estate, something like that?
We reinvest quite significantly back into the company. Okay, on the personal side, you know, like I have taken some parts of it. Yeah, just to keep it simple, it's all majority. We keep it in the company.
Over $1 million in your own personal bank account at this point? Can we say that?
It's difficult to say, yeah.
Okay, all right. Let's go back then to what you were doing before. Tell me about a typical client, maybe like Fidelity. You were working with them. What did you do for Fidelity back when you were a consultant?
Okay, I used to, as I mentioned, like I'm a specialized in this BizTalk server consultancy. These companies, when they come, you know, like typically these large enterprises will have a lot of systems and they will also have legacy systems as well. In case of Fidelity, what happened was they had like a, you know, years worth of financial systems running at the back end. And they were also at the same time modernizing it with the web and mobile and those kind of things. And they wanted to bring something in the middle. And that's when they decided to go with this BizTalk server as a middleware product. And they brought me in as a consultant. I spent about 5 years with them between 2007 to 2010, something like that, 2006 onwards. So I built in a lot of these systems using BizTalk server. So just to give an example, you go to their website and you fill a mortgage form or investment form or something like that. A message gets generated and that gets into BizTalk, and BizTalk will route that message to relevant legacy systems at the back end and to coordinate the whole thing. So that's the simplest form, but you can imagine at a scale, like when you're dealing with millions of messages and you need to deal with the scale and reliability and those kind of things. So that's what I built for them.
So I'm on your website from 2007. You were blogging a lot back then.
Yeah.
Why were you blogging about BizTalk? Why were you blogging about the conference you went to? Why were you blogging in general?
I'm still a hardcore technical guy, even though, you know, I'm a founder and, you know, I still get involved in the technical side of things. And blogging became a platform for me to express my thoughts. I didn't think too much like how we are thinking today, like a content marketing and blogging and those kind of things. The blogs I've written of the early days were purely based out of passion. And you really, you know, you identified a problem and you thought nobody else in the world know about this particular thing. And it's good to write it. And some of the blogs I have written very early days, it's still performing extremely well. Once in a while, I go to Google Analytics and I check out some stats. Simple thing is, you know, I wrote an article about licensing, how BizTalk server is licensed, because it's a very complicated enterprise licensing model. I wrote an article, and I'm sure if you search today, BizTalk licensing, I'm pretty sure that will be the number one article.
Yeah, look at this. The first response for that search term, BizTalk licensing, comes from Microsoft. And the second is your site in a post you first put up, I guess, March 21st, 2013. All right. So we'll see later how this impacted your business. But at the time, you were just doing it for passion. I imagine you were also getting some clients from it. You had your resume up on the site, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then what's the problem that you started identifying that was shared by a few of your customers?
one of the key problems I identified was, you know, like, okay, the clients, they implement the systems using BizTalk server, and it sits right at the heart of the company because a lot of systems connected to it, and they cannot afford to the system to go down. So they wanted to monitor it in some way, and there was no monitoring solution available to monitor the health of the BizTalk environment.
This is a key part of a business, right? If BizTalk is down, critical parts of the business, critical pieces of software don't talk to each other, and there's nothing or was nothing within BizTalk that would send a message to someone that says, hey, we're down, fix it.
If you can implement it, okay, it's like any other system, you can implement it. There was no out-of-the-box solution to, you know, I wanted to monitor the general health of my environment, whether my servers are running, whether it's talking to all those connected systems together, those kind of things. Microsoft got another product called System Centers Operation Manager. That is a product which monitors all these Microsoft technologies like SQL Server, Windows, and those kind of things. And they had a very little footprint when it comes to BizTalk server. So it's not a full-blown monitoring solution. And there is also a similar product from HP called HP Operations Manager. And they also got very little footprint. And in fact, like Fidelity brought an external consultant because Fidelity was using HP as a monitoring solution across their board. And they brought an external consultant to do it. And that's when I realized there's so much pain to, you know, like a configure a simple monitoring for a key system like that. And you're talking about enterprise customers here. And all of them are enterprise because of the nature of the product. You're talking only large enterprises using BizTalk server.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I thought, okay, there is an opportunity to build something. And I started building. In fact, I didn't start building. Initially, I was pulling a bunch of friends and we were trying to build it as an open source thing. We thought, you know, that time there was no idea about business or anything. You know, you're a tech guy, he's a typical tech guy, and you're trying to solve the problem. And, you know, the idea is to do it as an open source thing. Everybody said yes, but nobody turned up. So I ended up writing the code for about a year. And that's when, you know, like I was showing it back to the team. And
a year later, you showed it back to them?
Yeah, I did show straight to Microsoft guys as well. You know, like straight to the product group and the community. And they all liked it. And they said exactly that's what they want. Because they can configure monitoring within like a few hours rather than, you know, days and weeks or building anything custom. And that's how BizTalk 360 got started. Yeah.
I'm looking at the first version of your site. And right away, I'm wondering, is Microsoft going to be upset that he's using the name BizTalk? I scroll to the bottom and it says BizTalk 360 is not, capital letters, a product for Microsoft. It's developed and maintained by Kovai Limited, based in London. How do you not have a trademark issue with them when you're using their name in your name?
No, I think a lot of people ask this question, and I will say probably we were a bit lucky as well. You know, like as a, you know, I didn't have any idea like this could become like a challenge later. But luckily, like we were not, you know, building anything competing. We are more of a complementing product purely to BizTalk server. You know, like maybe they didn't.
But it feeds off of all the brand equity that they put in, you know, the trust that people have with BizTalk, the familiarity, you get to feed off of it. It seems like Microsoft just didn't care because they wanted to support the not the community. They see this whole ecosystem, right?
Correct.
I forget who it was who went to Microsoft, who went to Bill Gates and said, Bill, I created a platform just like you did. It's just the same way. And Bill Gates' response to him was, you didn't really create a platform until the people who are on your platform make more money from it than you make from the platform. And it seems like this might be part of their philosophy. Am I right? They ever talked to you about the trademark?
No, you are spot on. Basically, if you look at the earlier versions of the Microsoft as a company before they moved into this whole cloud ecosystem, they are actually partner-driven company. They are the, I think the biggest strength for them is the partner ecosystem. Worldwide, they have about 600,000 partners. And their philosophy is every dollar Microsoft makes, the partner ecosystem makes $15.
15,
yes.
Okay.
So, for example, BizTalk server, the licensing cost is, say, $100,000 for the enterprise license. And if you engage with a consulting company as a partner to implement a solution, their partner's billing will be $1.5 million. So that is the ecosystem.
And they intentionally did it because they knew that software for enterprise was never going to be self-serve, pay for it, install it, and forget it, right?
Correct.
And if that's the case and they're not going to get into the services part, they want to give you an incentive to service their software and promote their software and talk it up and tell people, don't use the other thing, use this.
Correct. So exactly. Because that is the, and in fact, that was their, one of the core strengths when you compare it with IBM's and Amazon and Google, because they didn't have this powerful partner ecosystem to go with. You know, that's one thing they did extremely well in the past.
So you built it. It's up and running. I'm looking at the first version here. How did you get any customers to pay you for it?
Okay. What happened was, you know, the blogging I was doing from 2004, and I've set up the company in 2011. During that, you know, seven, 8 years, I built a massive audience. This is actually, it's a kind of a niche market. If you look at it, there are Microsoft themselves, they got only about 12,000 customers worldwide for BizTalk Server. And I kind of became one of the influencers within that community because of the blogs.
Your blogging.
Exactly. Yeah. Because there's so many deep technical articles there. You know, I just gave one example, but if you go to some of the real technical terms, you will find my articles all over the place. So when I actually launched the product in June 2011, I already had a follower of over 10,000 people. It's a significant number for a niche market, enterprise market like that, to have that kind of followers. And I was able to, you know, without any marketing spend, I was able to convey that the launch of the product with a single blog post. Hey, this is what I did. This is the pain point. I spent last 1 year building this product. And what do you think about it? And within, you know, I put a few free trial sign up, and then I started getting signups straight away. That's how the company was launched. In fact, we never had any, you know, paid spend for a very long time. You know, it's all organic, just mainly through the blogs. We get some, you know, signups, and then we were closing. Yeah.
You know, I used to think that worked before, but maybe it doesn't work anymore. Maybe now it has to all be on Instagram or other platforms. And this guy who I interviewed just a few weeks ago, Nat Eliason, he's the founder of Growth Machine. It's an SEO company. The freaking guy just writes obsessively almost on his blog. It's very straightforward, very simple. If he reads a book, so he remembers the book, he writes the notes on it as a blog post, it's on there. If he's experiencing or thinking something, he puts it up on his site. It's not vapid. It's not empty. It's not every little thought that comes into his head. But when he has a clear thought that he wants to organize properly, he knows, he blogs about it, he puts it on his site. Anyway, he did this blog post just the other day. Where is it? Where he said that the month before he made $60,000 from his blog, that he still gets both customers, credibility, and in addition to it, he gets revenue from it. It's just shocking how blogging could be so powerful.
It is powerful, but now I feel it's getting really overcrowded because everybody wants to write about it and there's tons and tons of information. But when I did about 7-8 years ago, you know, there's not that much noise in the ecosystem. It was even today, you know, I know a lot of companies are doing extremely well on the content side of things, but it worked out very well in our case. Yeah.
It's not the amazing thing that it was before, but I'm surprised that it still works. And so customers who found you on there, your first customer, the first person who used your software and paid, just found you on your blog?
Yeah, definitely. Because the first customer is a company from Hong Kong. So I have no connection with them. So,
wow.
So they came all the way from, you know, I received an email through the contact form or something like that. Hey, we looked at your blog, you know, this is exactly what we want, you know, can we talk? And then that's how it all started. Yeah.
Did you have any imposter syndrome or any feeling of, well, really me? I'm not ready yet. You guys seem important.
I think that's right. You know, I didn't even have, it's a classic thing. I didn't even have a pricing. Okay. How much should I charge them? Okay. I just simply said, okay, $5,000 is a flat price for the product. Yeah.
Is that what I was looking at an early price sheet of yours, and it was something like 12% of the list price of Microsoft BizTalk Server as it's publicly advertised. that was one of the pricing schemes you came up with. That
is one of the earlier pricing scheme. I think the list price is about $44,000 is a Bistock license per server. So if a customer, you know, like has four or five licenses, you're talking $100,000, 12% of it. So that's one model we tried. Yeah.
Okay. How did it work out for the first client?
Yeah, I think it closed immediately. You know, like the product was very, you know, like a basic, but it solved the problem of, you know, you can have a monitoring up and running very quickly. It closed within, you know, a few weeks. And now if I look at it, you know, it's all like, it will be a dream for somebody now to close that kind of enterprise deals in, you know, one or 2 weeks, you know, like, okay, the pricing, you know, I think 5K is not big, but still it's enterprise is enterprise, right? You need to go through the whole loop of red tapes and, you know, they're able to convince and get it. So that year they launched it in June 2011 and I finished that year with five customers, all strangers, complete strangers.
How long before the revenue made up for the consulting revenue that you had before?
So what happened was actually with Fidelity, like, you know, when you're working on a system like that for 4 or 5 years and you're doing something core, you become very important, right? Because you own a lot of things. And then I went to my manager and I said, I have this idea. I built it for last 1 year, bits and pieces. It looks like it's going to work. I wanted to give it a try. What shall we do? And they were kind enough. They said, okay, we'll go part-time basically. So okay, they said, okay, you do 2 days a week and then take 3 days off and build the product. And I worked like about 8 months like that. So eventually, to put it in, it's always money in the bank. You never go negative any point in time because that's a cultural thing. It's embedded into my thing right from the beginning. So you even today, so we grow based on how much cushion we have. Like, can we sustain for next 2 years? It's always the point how the company was scaled. One person. I didn't hire anybody up to 30 customers. So only after getting 30 enterprise customers, I hired an admin girl to help me with all this licensing and PO and those kind of things. And we survived like that up to 65 customers. Then I converted my living room into a small office and we went to 5 people, 2 engineers and then 1 support and then 1.
In your living room?
In my living room. Yeah.
Was it awkward to have them at your living room for job interviews? Was that awkward?
Yeah, it was awkward. It's not awkward, you know, like, okay, I was able to convince. Okay, you can't convince the top guys, but you know, like people whom you think you can train them and coach them, you know, I brought them on board and then, you know, like I converted. Okay, I took the living room, stripped off everything, all the sofa and everything, and we set up like a proper office, like desks and wardrobe and boards and things like that. So converted that, and we survived up to 65 people, something like that. Then in 2013, that's when we opened the India office. We thought, okay, it's clearly there is a growth scale and, you know, as a product company, you know, it's with a long-term thing. We wanted to do it in a cost-effective way and we started the India operations in end of 2013. Yeah.
All right. I want to come back and find out a little bit about your childhood just to get a sense of who you are. And then we'll fast forward to Document 360 and why you decided to create something when there's so many competitors already doing it. But first, anyone out there who decides that they want to create a blog or any website at all, you can build it if you have a HostGator hosting account. Do you have any tips for somebody if they decide they want a blog? As someone who's blogged yourself, do you have any tips for them? If they say, you know what? I think this is the year I'm going to start to blog. I think this is the year that I'm going to start to put something out there. What tips do you have?
I think you just need to get started, basically. You know, that the procrastination, you know, like that's the biggest problem. And, you know, like you start blogging. And you can, you know, you like, you keep it simple, you know, try to keep it to 1 or 2 good blog, or you don't even, you know, like you just try to keep it really simple and get started. Getting started is the difficult part. And once it's there, also pick up a topic, you know, you like to talk about, you know, don't just do it just because, you know, somebody else's interest or, you know, don't think too much. You just get started and go with your passion and whatever you wanted to write.
You know what? I'm going to confess something. My wife and I were on a call with parents for an upcoming school reopening. I'm confessing her thing. But we were both on our phones, just Googling the people who are on the call. Now, obviously, we're going through the LinkedIn and whatever we see, but when we see a page that's their own personal site, we're so much more likely to click on that to get a sense of who they are. And what they've done with that is they got their shot to tell me who they are on their terms, not on LinkedIn terms, not on my terms where I go and search on page 3 of Google search results. It's them. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm bringing this up is we're all being Googled by everybody. You're going to hire somebody. You know you're going to Google them. You want to see what's out there. They're about to be hired by you. You know they're Googling you and everyone in the room. Obviously, they're going to see the LinkedIn profile. They're going to get it. But we've all seen that. The LinkedIn profile, the Twitter, the Instagram, we all know that's the person putting their face in some kind of platform that's designed to make them look good. When we see a personal site, it makes us feel like we've got insight into them. It's almost like we're walking into their living room. And yes, it's presented for people to look, but it's much more personal than a LinkedIn and Instagram, et cetera. So the reason I'm bringing that up is I suggest that anyone who's not created a blog, who hasn't created a website, who's thinking, hey, you know what? I got a little bit of time, or I want to be creative, or I want to actually put my own thoughts into the brain and an analysis process of the person who I'm going to talk to. That's the best way to do it. Go to hostgator.com/mixergy, create a website right now, and trust me, people will be Googling it. Link to it from whatever social profiles you have, but people will be Googling you. They'll be hitting that page. It's going to get more attention in those search results than it deserves, frankly, but it's your chance to say, here's who I am to all those people who think they're spying on you, but in reality are going to get your message directly to them. Hostgator.com/Mixergy will get you the lowest price from an already low provider, and it just freaking works. Hostgator.com/MIXERGY for that super low price from them.
I'll fully support it. Today, it's very important you build your personal brand. So it's if your name, your domain is available, you take it and you can easily configure any blog and start blogging with your own branding. Over time, it will pick up.
Hey, what do you have? Saravana.info, right?
The info, that's right. Yeah. I don't really write too much there, but once in a while, there are a few articles there.
And truthfully, it doesn't even matter. You got a list of quotes, you got an about page, and the about page is also the homepage where you tell me about yourself and you give me an opportunity to go and click on whatever you want me to pay attention to. It's not higher ranking than your LinkedIn profile, which is number one, but it's on the first page. And now you have an opportunity for what? What does that info cost? Like $5 a year, right?
I have about control 80, what I think of 80 domains, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think we all do. All right, going back to a little bit of who you are, you're a person who is, it seems like, really interested in computers growing up, huh?
Yeah, that's true. Like right from the young age, computers is one thing fascinated me. In India, I grew up in India. We didn't talk about it. Like I grew up in India. I came to UK when I was 22. That is in 2000. So until that point, all my childhood, schooling, university, everything was in India. So luckily, I had a chance to work with computers at a very young age, and somehow I got hooked up to it. And until today, that's my number one passion.
What did you like about computers when you were growing up? For me, it was more about the imagination of what I could do than what was really possible back then.
No, that's right. I think it's something, it responds to your thought process is fascinating for you, right? Like, okay, you can build something and you can tell the computer to, whatever you want to build, you can build it. For example, if you're doing into mechanical or civil engineering or something like that, it's not possible because you don't have those infrastructure and machineries and all those things. But the computer, so you and your computer, and you can, if you have the knowledge to write a programming and anything, you pick up and you can actually build quite a lot of things. I think that's what fascinated me at the Engage. Yeah.
What's that bookkeeping system you created for trainers?
Yeah, I just noticed there's a couple of training centers, teaching courses for. I just noticed they're struggling with the real proper, some manuals and scribbling notes kind of thing. So that's where I thought, there's an opportunity to build a system. And at that age, you're really looking for some problem to solve. And when I saw that one, I thought, maybe that is that could be computerized. And that's when all these GUI-based systems started to pop up, like Power Builder and VB2, VB3, those days is 95, 96, that kind of a time frame. Then I thought, okay, you know, like I just understood what they're trying to build, and then, you know, like build a system for them. I went back to them. I never got any money for that, but it just constantly, you know, getting feedback and enhancing the system and giving it back to them. And it just helped me to learn quite a bit by doing that.
Let's come back into why you decided that you had to get into the knowledge base system. I told you before we got started, every email help software that we have seems to come with knowledge base. Their whole idea is your customer service people are going to be answering questions a million times. Take those questions and turn them into a page on your knowledge base. So the next time somebody has a question, they could find it for themselves instead of searching, instead of contacting your customer support people. Why didn't you say, you know what? They're just already offering it. Zendesk got it, Helpdesk, Help Scout, every single one of them. Why did you have to get into it?
So in our case, like, you know, like we did use a Freshdesk as our help desk system. We still use Freshdesk. Freshdesk is our complete backend customer support tool. And we were using the self-service knowledge base that came along with the Freshdesk. But at one point, you know, we reached a stage where, you know, like we had like a full-time technical writers writing content, and there's the technical engineering team was writing content, and even marketing team was writing content into the knowledge base. And we got into all this problem of version control. Like, you know, like you wrote an article, that articles are never going to be stale. Like, you know, 2 months, 3 months down the line, somebody need to update that document. But most of the systems out there didn't have any version control system at all. You will simply overwrite it. In some cases, you know, the previous version of the article was much better than the one somebody has overwritten this time. This is one example. And the other example is workflow. So you want to have some level of control before you take an article to a public domain. So you want a draft writer to write the first version, and then you need a editor to review it and upload it. So that kind of workflow systems were not there. So you can imagine, you know, okay, all those help desk providers, you are fine. Like, you know, when you're starting up, when you have only like 20, 30 pages on your product knowledge base, that's fine. But when you start growing, when you have 200, 300 enterprise customers, and a lot of queries coming, you really wanted to block them at the knowledge base level, not hitting your support agents. You know, that is quite expensive, right? Because you don't want to, so the more polished your knowledge base is, the customers will find their answers quickly. And that's when we identified a gap in the market. And then we decided, like, okay, we will go build the product.
You got early on, you started building this for yourself because you needed it and you couldn't make it work with other knowledge base software, right?
Yeah.
What's an example of something that really bothered you so much that you said, we have to build our own?
Okay, there's one triggering point for us is a backup and restore. Like, accidentally, what happened was one of our technical writers accidentally deleted an entire category of articles on this SaaS knowledge base, and we couldn't recover it back. So it's a SaaS based system, right? It's gone because we don't take a personal backup of all those articles. You're relying on a SaaS platform. And we had to go through their support system, and they couldn't recover the articles as well because they only had, you know, like it's a complex process, and they couldn't recover the article. And that is also became as one of the triggering point now, because today, in fact, that is, even though it's a back-end functionality, that is one thing we build on the V1 of the product when we launched Document 360. Today, we take backup, and the customers can actually, even if you accidentally delete something, you can go to settings and it's like a time machine. You can say, okay, I want to restore it back to yesterday. Or in some cases, somebody messed up your system completely. Like, you know, they changed settings and they changed configuration, this and that. You can actually roll back. And we gave that is, you know, one example. There are, you know, like four or five core points, like version control, workflow, this backup restore, and things like, you know, like the good editor, category management, even search, you know, like having a really good search is important. The problem is, like, you know, everybody will say we have search. It's like Google and Bing and others, right? Like they say, yeah, we have search. But only when you're using it, you know what is the difference between a real search and somebody claiming they have a search. So today, if you go to any of our knowledge base, and you can say, you'll see instant answers because we spend We use Algolia at the back end, but we had to do a lot of work on top of Algolia to make it really like super fast and usable. So we understood the problem space very well, and that's what transformed into Document 360.
I see what you mean. And I see the Angola. Is that the name? I always mispronounce her name, that search company. It's a Y Combinator company, right?
Angolia. It's a French
Algolia.
Company. Yeah. They're pretty good. Yeah.
It's a vegetable?
I don't know.
Algolia. Let me see. I found them first on Hacker News. And I feel like anything that Hacker News uses, I got to go and investigate and see why they're using it. And then I saw how great their search was. You know what? It occurred to me, I never asked you how you got the rest of your customers. So you told me that once you got to about 30, I think, you ended up hiring this woman who came in and helped you organize. But how did you get to 30? It wasn't just people picking up on your blog. And then we're going to come back to Document 360. But I'm always interested in how companies get more customers.
It's a purely, in our case, it's 100% organic. As I said, you know, we never spend, especially for BizTalk, even today, we don't spend too much on the paid campaign. It's completely organic through all the blogs and people come. That's how it works.
You're saying it's still blogging and content marketing that's working for you?
Yeah, it's all the content we have written. We have about, you know, close to 1,000 articles in that space for BizTalk. I'm talking about BizTalk. So as I said, you know, any term you search related to BizTalk, we will be there. And also, we built that entire community as well. So we became like a known brand within that community. And we run our annual conference once a year. We run a global conference in London. It's called Integrate. It's attended by about 500 people from all over the world. They fly to London. That's become like one of our big, kind of a lead sources, source, and as well as a branding as well. That is another way we get some customers. Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can find anything in SimilarWeb, and nothing's turning up for what's especially powerful for you. I'm guessing you eventually started hiring people to write but why didn't you hire people to, why didn't you hire salespeople?
So we do have salespeople, but the salespeople are more, it's mainly predominantly
for inbound.
Inbound, yeah. So we did try outbound. We did, you know, of course, we, you know, with this kind of revenue and the growth, we did try experiment with outbound, but it didn't work out well for us. So, you know, like in terms of a percentage, I will say like, you know, 90-95% came from inbound and 5% was outbound, yeah.
How did you decide that you're going to add more software instead of just focusing on this one thing?
The thing is, BizTalk is kind of a legacy technology, and Microsoft is moving more towards the cloud, and they stopped focusing on all the on-premise products. So, and also the market size is also pretty limited. You know, whatever effort you are going to put, there is a total addressable market it's only like, as I said, 12,000 customers is what Microsoft themselves got for BizTalk. It is really good for a bootstrap company because, you know, identifying your ideal customer profile is pretty easy. It is a very well-defined market and you can easily, you know, dominate the entire market, but it's not really a scalable business. If you wanted to build, you know, like a $30-$50 million business, it's not there. That's when we started diversifying into other products. Yeah.
How'd you know the first one to get into?
We actually moved to a similar product called Serverless 360. It's a Microsoft Azure cloud focused product. And then we came to Document 360. So that's how we created these three products.
And there's also Atomic Scope. What's that?
Atomic Scope is like, it's a small, like add-on kind of a product. So, you know, it just sits either with the BizTalk 360 or Serverless 360. But in terms of main products, these are the three main products we focus. Yeah.
Got it. All right. And so when it's time to get new customers for Document 360, how'd you get them?
So Document 360 is a typical SaaS acquisition model. So okay, there is a portion of it comes from a regular organic SEO. We invested in SEO quite heavily right from when we are building the product, and we spend a lot of money on Google, and also we put a lot of energy into all the review sites like G2 and Captera. And okay, there are only limited channels available, right? Like, okay, you know, it's not magic, you know. Okay, you need to work out these four or five channels available for you, and that's a typical acquisition model for us.
Yeah, the thing that would drive me crazy is that it's such a big investment for somebody to move to a new knowledge base software. You know, once they're already on something, they have to really suffer the pain of it and then be willing to suffer even more short-term pain to get past it to the other side where there is, where it's a better life, right? That's a really tough customer to go after, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, every day, there are so many people actually looking to switch to different knowledge base. So the way, you know, typically the way we look at it is, you know, like, okay, internally, the company wise, what we are looking at is, okay, if we pick up a product, can we take it into $10 million revenue in, you know, 5-6 years, something like that is what our goal for touching any product.
Okay.
So if you look at the Document 360, the average revenue per customer is about $100 to $150 per month. So if we can get 10,000 customers, that is good enough for us to be like, you know, successful model as a product, and which is achievable. Like, you know, if you're looking at 6-7 years time and you are only targeting 10,000 customers, that's the model we are going after. Yeah.
And so you're saying, yeah, it's a big commitment for someone to move, but we're not trying to convince someone to switch. We just recognize that there are a bunch of people who are looking to switch. Here are the places where they're going to make their decision. It's the review sites, it's Google, it's a couple of others. We'll be there. And if they look at us and give us a shot, then we'll have an opportunity to get them to switch.
Correct.
All right. I'm going to talk about my second sponsor. It's a company called TopTal. I asked you if you knew TopTal, and what did you say? What do you know about TopTal?
Yeah, I'm aware of them. Like, you know, in the very earlier days of BizTalk 360 days, I used to use Odesk. It's called Upwork. So I used to get some help for, you know, the building the MSI, the packaging and website and those kind of things. So when I saw TopTal advertise ads in few places, I think they're all over the place, like Quora and LinkedIn and everywhere. So I'm kind of know what they're doing. So I believe it's a similar kind of a model where you can go and hire either a freelancer or a group of people if you have a shortfall of resources, or, you know, like you want to fill up your engineering resources, you can hire from them.
Here's where they're different. I recently needed a researcher. I just wanted to get some facts on something. You know, I like to be as prepared as possible. I put up my ads on these freelance sites. I get a bunch of requests from people. I then start asking them questions, and then I'm going back and forth. Now I'm in the business of evaluating whether they're cheating me through text messaging or not, because some of them just don't know what they're talking about. And I want to be nice to everybody, but I also have to move on. And it's a lot of freaking work. I even hired a recruiter who's supposed to recruit from those places. And there's still too much work where I'm not finding the right people. The thing about TopTal is, number one, they focus on doing that research ahead of time. Nobody's in their network unless they are. To say the best of the best is not significant enough. They're really good. And then when you need somebody, you don't go to a site, put up an offer and say, does anyone have the skills that I'm looking for? You talk to a human being. And then that human being says, here are the people who've done the job that you need. They've done it. They're excellent at it. And I'm going to get you on a call with them so you can talk to them within a few days often. I did that. There was 1 or 2 days where I sat down and I just went through call after call after call with TopTal people, because I did want, for that one project, I wanted 5 people before I decided. I talked to all 5. I picked someone. It was phenomenal. That's the way it works. People who are selected before, a matcher who makes sure that they're not wasting your time, and then you decide who you want to work with, and you can work with them on a project basis, full-time basis, whatever you need. You can even hire a full team of people who just work well together. All right. Anyone out there who's listening to me and is persuaded by this and wants to get started, you can go to toptal.com. You can click on any number of ads that they have, or you can use this special URL where they're going to give you 80 hours of developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period. You know that URL by now, and you probably have heard me whip through this too fast in the past. I'm going to go slower. It's toptal.com/mixergy. Top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent.com/mixergy. Let me do it one more time. toptal.com/mixergy. All right. I'm grateful to them for sponsoring. I'm kind of curious, like, about you and your personal life. Are you doing anything fun? Are you doing anything beyond working? What's your thing?
Yeah, just a family. I got two young boys, 13 and 10. They occupy most of my time. I spent a lot of time with my elder one. He's also into computing and he likes programming, and we do a lot of fun projects together.
Kind of projects?
So right now he's building an iOS app, and I think it's coming very well. It's for trainers, personal. Yeah, exactly.
Seriously? Like what you did.
We got a personal trainer for the whole family, and I just gave him a small project. Okay, we need to build a system for Nigel. Nigel is our personal trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know he's only making notes in his notepad, and we should try. Actually, we're keeping it as a secret. We are building it for the last 4 or 5 months now. It's coming along very well. So I spend some time with him.
And you want your son to think about one person when he's creating it? Why?
We picked up three personas basically, and I related all three personas to whom he is familiar with. One is the personal trainer, and then the second person is a tutor, is a English and mathematics tutor, and the third is a group coaching, the badminton coaching. So all three will come under the same app. It's basically scheduling and then invoicing and then cancellations.
Because anyone who's working individual with people for personal one-on-one services, they have a set of needs, and whether it's tutoring or training, it includes payment, it includes scheduling. What else does it include? Imagining notes or feedback on what you did
exactly.
This week.
Notes, they book a session and you need to take notes. We indirectly ask him questions. Okay, how do you do this one? Okay, we'll ask him, okay, what do you do? And he says, before coming to the session, I look at all my previous notes so that I know what session to give this time. So and that is applicable for tutor as well. I'm sure he needs to go and check all the previous notes and say, okay, today I'm going to teach these things. So, I think I'm slowly teaching him, okay, you need to go based on a customer persona. So, exactly you need to go and find 1,000 Nigels to be successful. Okay, let's try to build it for Nigel and then let's try to scale it.
And that makes sense. If you can charge a certain number per month, you get 1,000 Nigels, then let's say if it's $5 a month, that's $5,000 a month from just that one category.
That's the plan, yeah.
That's what you're thinking of. Wow, that's your fun thing to build a business with your son?
Yeah, he's too young. It's nothing money motivated, but I think
the development project is good.
He's getting really interested, and I can see him, getting deeper into. He also got that natural interest as well. I'm not forcing him. Like he wants to do programming, and he's good at maths. So I think it's a really fun thing to do. And outside, I like cars.
What type of cars? What do you have?
I got
the open
Lambo and a Porsche.
Wow. How's it feel? Is it everything you thought it would be as a kid?
Yeah. I think in my personal blog, I think you got there and saravana.info. There is a blog I wrote for the Porsche. And once you reach Lambo, I thought, okay, you go quieter, right? You don't want to.
You don't want to write a blog post about that.
So yeah, took a delivery beginning of the year. Yeah, I think I always liked cars, and we have, personally, I have those different levels. The first is BMWs and Audis, and then the Porsche, and then you go to Lambo, Ferrari, and then you go to Zondas, and then Bugattis. So we'll see how far I can go.
I see what Zondas. That's Zondas.
Zonda Pagani. That's next level to Lambos and Ferrari, and finally. You'll get into Bugatti, Chirons.
I shouldn't be looking at this. This is going to make me want these cars. I'm not even a car person. I don't like cars, but this looks amazing.
Yeah.
Zonda Bugatti. Apparently I'm into that. Pagani?
Zonda Pagani is the next level. And then the final is about a Bugatti. We'll see.
And then you have like a number that you need to hit before you get one of these cars? It's in your head.
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that 10 million is one of the next big milestones.
No, 10, no, I think probably 15 maybe. Yeah.
Got it. As you were telling me about your son and how you were thinking through what does your trainer need and asking him how he does certain things. I looked at the list of features. I went through the demo on Document 360. I was wondering how you ended up with all these features. What did you do to understand what needed to go into your software?
Okay, the first initial set of core features, it came from straight from our own pain points, because it's a pretty straightforward, because we are not building anything drastically new. So we know exactly, for building an enterprise knowledge base or any good product knowledge base, you need to have these XYZ things on place. And that's exactly what we did. We took only 6 months before we took the product to the market. So we wrote the first line of code. We did a company hackathon in December 2017, and then we decided we are going to build the product. January 2018, we assembled the team. June 2018, we went live, and we got our first customer that month. So only 6 months to go to the market. And we know exactly, okay, we don't have all the sophisticated, you know, private documentation and security and those kind of things, but the very first set of features are good for a segment of customers. So we were able to target those customers at the early stage, and then we brought private documentation, and then we brought some advanced features like workflow, and now we are building things like enterprise single sign-on and localization and those kind of things. So stage by stage, now we are moving more upmarket and really sophisticated. Like for example, you know, Monday.com is our customer now. So, you know, like, so we are getting into that kind of brackets now, yeah.
And what did you do to know what next features to build? Is it talking to your existing customers or going after your ideal and asking them what they needed?
No, both actually. Like, you know, like we do talk to, as part of the customer success, we speak to a lot of customers, and whenever we are doing a demo continuously, you hear feedback from, you know, they want this, we capture everything. And then every week we have like a show and tell meeting, we call it. The entire team joins, and then all the salespeople, customer success team, and then everybody comes, and then we summarize everything. What are the key features we hear from the different people? And then we have a pipeline, like, you know, we have at least for next 9 to 12 months, solid pipeline, the things what we wanted to build. Once you reach a point, you know, like then, you know, getting new features is not a problem. You just need to filter it out, and then, you know, make sure your app is not getting too bloated, and you need to continuously make sure, you know, like it still looks sleek, and add features in a controlled way.
What's your criteria for deciding to add something?
It must be it should solve a pain point for a lot of people. Like, we need to see like whether it's something is usable for a large volume of people. The core features are the ones we will try to address at priority. Yeah.
All right. I can see then why login is a big one. I know how important it is, especially now when people are working from home, right? Companies are locking it down. All right. For anyone who wants to go check you out, it seems like the best of all these products for them to go and check out is Document 360. And the website for that is document360.io, right?
Yep.
All right.
So we got .com as well. So we purchased the domain.
Then why are you giving me .io? I feel like .com would be better.
No. I think it's we haven't configured it. We
bought it recently.
We bought it recently.
You had to buy it after you built out the business?
Yeah.
How tough was that?
Sorry?
How tough was that to get it after you had a whole business set up on it, on .io?
No, I think we, after seven, 8 months, we bought it. We paid about $10,000 or pounds. I can't remember. Yeah, so
Either way, not bad. I mean, it's high for what it is, but it's worth the price considering what you need.
It's not bad. Yeah, it's definitely, because when I hear, like, I did a quick search and I didn't realize hotels.com, they paid 11 million in 2000.
For what?
11 million. Yeah. Hotels.com.
What? Wait, see, they don't.
Hotels.com.
Oh. Yeah, that's kind of painful right now. Yeah, no, this is not in the same league. Wow. All right, so there it is. Now people can go to just document360.com. I see it automatically redirects. And while I'm here talking about URLs, I might as well tell people the two URLs that belong to my sponsors. The first, if you're hosting a website and you need a lower price, or you want to get started hosting a website, take control of your own personal identity, your own personal reputation, have the other parents at the parent group Google you and see the pages you want, whatever you need. If you need a hosting package, go to hostgator.com/mixergy. And second, when you're ready to hire a developer, go to toptal.com/mixergy. Thanks so much for doing this. Thanks, everyone.